So first, I'd like to welcome everyone to another SIF Real Estate Investment Podcast, Episode 2. And today's theme will be 1031 tax-deferred exchanges and how they can potentially increase your income by 50%, 100%, or even 200%. Today, I'll be speaking with Scott Fong, the president and founder of SIF, who most of you know and a good friend of mine. There will be a couple of areas in today's topic. First one being, what is a 1031 tax-deferred exchange? Number two, why most real estate investors have never used an exchange and some of the barriers in the real estate market that make it difficult. Number three, who is a good candidate and the best time to use an exchange? And of course, how SIF can help you through this process. So first, let me start by asking Scott a very simple question. Scott, can you explain what a 1031 tax-deferred exchange is?
Sure, Brad. A 1031 exchange is, the tax code 1031, is if you have an investment piece of property with gain on it, you can sell that property and defer the gains and put it into another property without paying the taxes. And an example of that would be if you had a property in San Francisco that appreciated a lot and there's a lot of gain, you could sell that property, defer the gain into another property, say in Portland, Oregon. Now that property that you bought in Portland, Oregon obviously has better income, better rental income, and better returns. So the purpose really would be to better your position, utilizing the equity from an existing property into another property by deferring the taxes and reaping the rewards of getting a higher income and higher returns.
That sounds good, Scott. Nobody wants to pay any more taxes than I have to, and I think a 1031 is a nice way to sell a property that's not doing so well and maybe replace it and not pay taxes on that transaction. So that's a good explanation. I know in the past we spoke a little bit about how you feel that the majority of real estate investors are not taking advantage of 1031 exchanges. And you also mentioned by not doing so, they're missing out on increasing their income and returns. Can you explain a little bit about why you don't think they're taking advantage of the exchange process?
Well, there's a lot of reasons why people don't take advantage of the 1031 exchanges. And I'm going to go over four or five barriers I see in the industry that make it difficult for the individual investor. Number one is demographics or the location of your property. Your property is located in San Francisco. You probably don't know other regions that well. You know the region that you're in. You may not know Salt Lake City or Austin or Boston might present better opportunities. So real estate is very, very regional. In fact, it may even be city-wide or regional. How you bought that first piece of property is through your realtor. And so working through the individual realtors, your market is pretty limited to where you invest. The second barrier is compensation of realtors. So it's pretty simple. If a realtor can find you a property in the area that they represent, they're going to get compensated a lot more than referring out to another state and getting a referral fee. That's just a fact. That's no fault of the realtors. That's just part of the industry. Number three is simply, seems really basic, just calculating how well your property is doing. Most investors don't even know that simple answer. Why they don't is because it's up to the individual investor to calculate their own net returns. And by doing that, they're going to need to know a few key pieces of information is what has been their cash flow over the holding period of that property, what are the tax benefits and depreciation, what is the property currently worth today, and what was their down payment, original down payment. The key factor is really is how do they come up with the exact value or what it's worth today. So you can go to a few sites such as Zillow and get approximate value of that property, or you can go to a realtor. So it's very complex how to calculate your whole net returns, and if you don't know how well you're doing or not doing, most people just sit on their properties.
I think it makes sense, Scott. I agree with you that most investors don't know, and if you don't know, it's hard to make a decision on what you should do with that piece of property. And from what it sounds like there really isn't anyone to help the investor, or at least that's my perception of it. So I guess let me ask that question. Whose job is it is to help the investor know how well they're doing, or how would you explain that?
Yeah, that's interesting. I come from the financial planning world, and financial planners or wealth advisors can easily give their clients, and that's what they're paid to do, how well they're doing, how well are they performing in the stock market. The interesting thing is in the real estate market, there is it's no one's job to tell you as the investor how well your property is truly performing. Sometimes we'll make general comments on, well, the area is doing pretty well, it's up 5%. That doesn't tell you how actually well your property is doing. So there lacks a financial advisor for the real estate industry. It's really no one's job. That's the biggest reason why a lot of people just sit on their properties without realizing they're leaving a lot of money on the table, and they can do a tax-deferred exchange.
That makes sense, Scott. And I know one thing that I like to mention a lot is we talk about how there's a lack of that advisor in the real estate industry. And I like to point out that that's what SIF is, just if anyone had any misconception about it. We are that real estate advisor that gives you that advice. And I know you also talked about how real estate is reactionary versus proactive. Can you explain that a little bit too?
Yeah, for the simple sake that if you don't know, as I mentioned, if you don't know how well you're doing, you don't make a move. And so transactional investment such as real estate, it's bought and sold through the realtor. It's usually a investor will get a card in the mail. They may talk to a friend about how well the property is doing. But again, if they knew the property was up 16%, down 12%, and there were better options, they would make a move. So it's not proactive. It's reactionary. Usually, what I find with our investors here is they will start analyzing their existing properties due to certain occurrences in their life, and a lot of them happen to be negative, such as death in the family, a divorce happens, or maybe that's a positive. This is a positive. Someone is retiring. The problem with that, if you wait till you retire until you analyze your portfolio properties, you've probably left a lot of money on the table by not doing an exchange.
I think, yeah, it's definitely more reactionary than proactive, and I think proactive is the way to go. We both agree with that. You also mentioned that, you know, a couple other reasons why maybe it was hard to measure, you already mentioned, and how investors don't know their options. Are there anything else that make it hard to be proactive, maybe the complexity of it?
Yeah. You know, 1031 is very complex in the nature of it. There's timelines to follow. By the time once you sell the relinquished property, you only have 45 days to find or identify your replacement properties. There's also timelines on when you have to close on those replacement properties. So those can be pretty intimidating. What needs to occur is that investor has to be very, very dedicated over the course of 3 to 6 months of working at this to find out can they get better replacement properties, how to increase their income, how to get better returns. So I think the complexity of the exchange, they need to work through their CPA, need to work through an advisors, they need to work with realtors to find out what are their options. But definitely the rewards are very worthwhile, because what we have found is, you know, probably 80 to 90% of all investors who've had property for at least 7 to 10 years could do significantly better if they did an exchange, simply by, you know, selling their property, doing the homework to find out where they can find exchange properties. As I mentioned before, we can increase their incomes by 50, 75%, 100%, and we've done it up to 200% over the last 2 years or so.
One thing that sticks out in my mind of what you mentioned was the investor has to work very hard to work with the realtor, the CPA, be very diligent over those 3 to 6 months, you know, depending on where they're at in the process. And I think that's key, because when we were talking about reactionary versus proactive, and when everything is up to you, the investor, and you're a busy professional and you're working a lot, it's difficult. And I think that's why we all get busy, and I think that's why more investors aren't proactive, is because it's just so much to do on their own. And I think that's why we both are advocates of having a good, well-rounded team that can help them through that process. So I think that makes sense. And now that we know more about the exchange, how it works, what the benefits are, can you tell us who is a good candidate for an exchange? Is there a particular profile?
Yeah. Anyone who has investment property with equity, that's a starting point. Number two is if their incomes are low relative to their value of the property, and most investors don't know that. So I'm going to give you an example here of, say you have a property that's worth $1 million and there's $500,000 of equity in it. If your income on that property for the year is $50,000, Well, if you can find replacement properties and increase income to $60,000, is that a good candidate to do an exchange? Absolutely, it could be. But the increase in income from $50,000 to $60,000 is not that large. So the client has to keep that property for probably at least 7 to 10 years to make it worthwhile by the time they pay expenses to get out of their current position. Now, another example, if you took that same property, a $1 million property with income of $50,000, and they could increase their income to $100,000 with another property, well, that's a no-brainer. That one, you would have, your break-even point would be probably less than 2 years, where even after paying expenses to get out of their position, you have another $50,000 every year in income. And to kind of look at my point of, if you wait and you just kind of pay off your mortgage and not analyze your property, if you think about it, that $50,000 isn't just lost in 1 year, it's lost every single year. So if you've waited 10 years, you essentially lost out potentially on $500,000 of income that would go in your pocket.
Yeah, I think it's a very key point, Scott. That's huge. And you mentioned time in there. I think, actually, speaking about time is one of the biggest barriers I think people have, is they're not sure if it's the right time for an exchange, you know, based upon the value of their properties, up or down, should I do it now or later? And I think it's one of the best questions I can ask you. Is there a best time to do an exchange?
Yeah, I think the investor or the client has to be ready to do it. I mean, obviously, if you can have incentive where you're doubling their income, I think that would get their attention. But the best time is, the biggest barrier I see is, especially in today's market, clients don't want to sell today on their existing property because the market is down. What a lot of them fail to see is they're going to make up for that loss, or they're selling their existing relinquished property at a lower price than they expected. When they repurchase, they're going to benefit on the buy side and make up for that. So you're never going to win on both sides of the equation. It's always going to be a wash. Whether the market is going up, you're going to be selling your relinquished property at a higher price, but you're also probably going to overpay for your replacement properties, and vice versa. In today's market, you're going to get a below price for your existing property, but at the same time, you're going to get a bargain on the replacement. So the right time is if you have significant increase in income and you can put in the time, that would be the best time.
Yeah, that's that makes sense, Scott. I think that kind of takes away the time factor, because you're right. If you're selling lower than you expect, but you're also buying a bargain, then the time doesn't really matter, and you're making it up on the increased cash flow and return. So time isn't really a factor. It's more of analysis and knowing what your options are. So I think that's
correct.
Good. So I have one last question for you, which I think that was really educational and very good. Now, how can SIF help the investors through this process? I know that's probably what most people are thinking, is what's our role in this process, and how do we play a role in that?
Sure. Yeah. The first step would be is we analyze a client's existing portfolio of properties, whether that's one property or 10 properties, and we'll look and see which properties or property makes a very good candidate for an exchange. And how we look at that is, if we know what the true net returns are and we know that the incomes are low relative to the value, that's a great starting point. So what we'll do is we'll find brokers in the region that they have this existing property, and we act as a third-party advisor. The key for this, how we work with a client, is we're going to maximize the sales price on the existing property. So that's huge. Next, we're going to walk them through the timelines and make sure that we identify significant properties that can increase their incomes. And we're not limited to a general area, say San Francisco or the Bay Area. We don't care if the client wants to buy in Salt Lake City, Austin, Texas, Portland, Oregon, or Boston, Massachusetts, as long as the risk-reward and that area they're comfortable in. Because we're not brokers that represent them in the buy and the sell. On the repurchase, our job is to negotiate the most to get them the best price, or to save them the most in today's market. So on the sell and on the repurchase, we feel, acting as a third-party advisor, we do a great job and put more money in their pocket.
Yeah.
And, we walk them through this whole process of identifying through the 45-day window and close on all those properties from A to Z.
Yeah, Well, I agree. This kind of sounds good. And if I could just highlight a couple of things also that reiterate, I guess, is, yeah, basically the analysis, you know, first knowing how your property is performing, we help you with that, overseeing all the professionals involved to make sure you get the best service pricing and options. And I think that's a key part of it. And like you said, Scott, going well beyond your local market, because we're not the actual broker buying or selling that property. We're just overseeing professionals involved. It allows much greater choices across the board. And so I think that was good explanation of 1031 exchanges and how SIF plays our process in that exchange. And I'm going to close it by saying if anyone wants more information, they can get that on our website at sifinvestment.com. And are there any last words you have, Scott, before we end the podcast today?
No, just, you know, if anyone has an existing investment property with equity, it would be to your to advantage to at least take a look at how well it's performing and see what your options are.
Yeah. And one thing I actually forgot to mention was on the website, again, we do offer a free consultation. So if you need help looking at your properties to analyze the current returns and cash flows, then we'd be happy to help you do that. And at least that'll give you a good starting point to know what your options are and what your choices might be. So thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll see you again on the next SIF Real Estate Investment Podcast.